A few years ago, I found the perfect birthday gift for my wife. Are you ready for this now? It was a license plate. Yeah, I'm just a romantic guy. Hear me out. She actually really, really loved this license plate because, you see, she is a fanatical Florida State Seminole fan. And I was able to find, even in the Commonwealth of Virginia, a so-called vanity license plate that had the Florida State Seminole logo on there and the Florida State colors and all the rest of it. And I was very pleased with myself, but I was struck when I found this, two things. First of all, by the plethora of choices there were, and secondly, by how much it set me back. It was pretty expensive, and I realized then that states are making an awful lot of money off of these license plates. But are there significant First Amendment issues? How about if the Nazis want to have a license plate? I'm Stuart Harris. It's your weekly constitutional, and it's all about government speech.
Welcome to your weekly constitutional, hosted by Professor Stuart Harris and produced in partnership with the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution at James Madison's historic home, Montpelier.
We've all seen those so-called vanity license plates. They take a couple of different forms. Some states will actually let you choose the numbers and the letters that are on your particular license plate. Others will offer you a choice of a particular logo or color scheme that perhaps supports your favorite sports team. They take all different forms. But I think it's fair to say that all the states that offer these so-called vanity tags exercise some sort of control over what can be put on them. For example, if I want to spell out a nasty word and on my particular license plate, well, then the Department of Motor Vehicles in my state would likely tell me, nah, that's a naughty word and you can't do that. Or if I am a member of a group, let's say I'm a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and I want to have a Ku Klux Klan themed plate and I propose that to the state might very well decide, we don't really want that on our license plates. But wait a second now. It's the government, it's the state, telling me that I can't express myself in a certain way on my license plates. Is that a First Amendment issue? Kind of looks like it, doesn't it, until you think about it. Is that license plate really mine, or does it belong to the state? Is it me who's speaking on that plate, or is it the state? Is, in fact, the state engaging in something called government speech, something that's beyond, not covered by, the First Amendment? It's actually a much stickier, a vaguer issue, a more difficult issue than perhaps you might realize. And here to speak with me about it today is my old buddy, who used to be at the Appalachian School of Law with me and who's now way out west at the Air Force Academy. His name is Doug McKechnie.
Hi, Stuart. I'm Doug McKechnie, and I am a professor in the law department at the United States Air Force Academy.
And I already knew that, of course, because we are buddies and we've done this on many other occasions. And so I know from experience to ask you to go ahead and give your standard I am not the government disclaimer.
Thank you for the opportunity, Stuart. I appreciate it. I need to let you and your listeners know that my views are my own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or the United States government.
And given what we're going to talk about, that's a very important and timely disclaimer, because we're going to talk about something called government speech, aren't we?
We are. We're going to talk about when you have a license plate, and particularly a license plate that expresses some particular viewpoint or expresses some particular message that's a special message. Is that your message that you're expressing, or is that a government message?
That's a fascinating question, because pretty clearly, if I put a bumper sticker on my car, that's my message. If I write in the dirt on the back of my car, if I haven't washed it recently, which I haven't, that's my message. That's pretty clearly my message, and it's going to be protected to the extent the First Amendment protects any of my speech. But now you're talking about these license tags, and I'm guessing you're going to say this is not necessarily clear who's doing the speaking.
It is a little unclear, and there's a case coming before the Supreme Court that asks just that question. When there is a unique message, other than sort of the generic message for the generic license plate, but there's some sort of unique message or design on a license plate, is that the government articulating that message, or is that the private message of the person who owns and operates the car?
You know, that's a fascinating question, because as you and I both know, being the old fellows that we are, these vanity plates have been around a while, but they've gotten much, much more popular in the last few years, no doubt because of all the revenue they generate for the states. But I guess as a person who has occasionally gotten these plates and gotten sports logos on my own plates, I always thought of it as my message and my speech sort of being superimposed on this generic license plate. But you're telling me it's not clear that it's just my speech.
I think that's right. It's a little unclear, and I guess I would think of it as if you're driving down the street and you look in front of you and you see the car that's in front of you, which I'm sure most of your listeners have done throughout their lives, and you see some sort of license plate that's an atypical license plate, looks a little different than the standard state-issued license plate. Who do you associate with the message that's on that license plate? Who do you associate with? Who's the fan of the University of Tennessee or Virginia Tech? Is that the driver of the license plate, or is that the state who is putting forth that message?
Well, intuitively, it seems to me that there are two messages there. They're distinct. One of them is a very basic government message that this is a licensed vehicle. And when here are the necessary numbers, you know, maybe those little stickers on there that, you know, say that it's registered. That's message number one. And message number two, the one we're more concerned with, that's pretty clearly to me the whoever paid for it.
Well, the state of Texas, and I'm sure most states would disagree with you. In most states,
Texas would disagree with me. I'm shocked.
Yeah, and Texas, I pick on Texas particularly because that's the case. It came out of Texas, and Texas's specialty license plate program is what the Supreme Court will be deciding. And in the Texas program, as in most states, specialty license plates are created and offered to motorists in a couple different ways. In one way, sometimes the state legislature itself will propose and vote on and ultimately create a specialty license plate. And most people would say that's a government speech. It's coming from the actual government itself. It's coming from the legislative branch. But then there is another way that these specialty plates are created. And this is where the rub is. In many states...
Before we get there, may I interrupt you, please, Doug?
Sure.
Okay, the state of Texas creates a license plate that goes beyond the usual registration subject and says, you know, go Longhorns, right? Go UT mm-hmm. football. But I still would have the option as a driver as to whether to pay extra to have that or not, wouldn't I? So is it really clearly Texas's speech? In the first instance, I think maybe it's more my speech because I've chosen to... You support the Texas Longhorns by purchasing that license plate with that special message on it.
Well, from the government's perspective, what the government argues is you're a private motorist who's just willing to assist the state in propagating a state-approved message. And the state creates the program for specialty license plates. It creates the venue of literally the producing the license plate. And so the state, whether it's Texas or Virginia or Tennessee, is just using you as a way to transmit the messages that it decides will be on the license plate or not on the license plate. And so if you think of it, you see a license plate. It bears the state's name. It appears as though it bears some sort of stamp of approval. And so the government says, well, we want to be able to decide whether or not there's going to be sacrilegious messages on a license plate or swastikas or overtly racist messages or symbols. And so the government just says, when we create a license plate and offer it to you to put on your car, that's just you choosing to essentially be a conduit for our message.
Okay, well, I guess I see your argument there, and I guess I could see why that would be considered government speech. The government's creating a smorgasbord, and I, as a driver, simply get to choose which of these state-approved messages I wish to have on my plate. And I suppose as long as I could choose to have more or less no message at all among my choices, I wouldn't necessarily object to that, though I could even see a problem there. I mean, if the state of Texas got really overtly political, you know, on some major hot-button issue— I might still have a problem with the state speaking in that regard, and I don't know. It's a troublesome area. I'm already getting troubled when they move away from their basic, simple registration information. But I realize that's not the focus of this case. So,
well, actually, interestingly, I think you bring up a really good point, and if one remembers, state mottos sometimes were on the old generic license plates. So.
Yeah.
For example, New Hampshire residents will often have on the generic license plate,
yes,
live free or die. And there was a case that actually went to the Supreme Court, and there was a gentleman who was a Jehovah's Witness, and his argument was, I am uncomfortable from a religious perspective, from a moral perspective, I'm uncomfortable with that message being on my license plate that I have to drive around with, that I'm indeed required to drive around with. And so he would cover it up with duct tape or something like that. And he was getting fined by the government for covering up not his entire license plate, only the part that said live free or die. And ultimately the Supreme Court decided, you know, there is some free speech rights when it comes to compelling speech on a license plate. And an individual is absolutely free to hold a different point of view from the government or refuse to foster or further the government's message on the license plate because the government forces him to have that license plate. And so the Supreme Court said there is some free speech component to the license plate.
I guess what I'm really grappling with is the very concept of politicized government speech. And I realize that's a vague notion, but hear me out. I understand the government has to speak. The government works through human beings, government officials, and those government and people, when they're acting on behalf of the government, are speaking on behalf of the government. I understand that. But I guess what I'm really uncomfortable with is the idea that the government of any state would go out and start taking political positions. And saying, you know, we like Republicans or we like Democrats or we don't like abortion or we do like abortion. Just the very concept of politicized government speech is something that makes me hesitate.
The Supreme Court in the past has said when the government is using tax dollars to articulate a message and the government determines that overarching message, whatever it may be, the government can speak if it wants to. And indeed, it's not a First Amendment issue at all because the text of the First Amendment stops the government from inhibiting our private speech rights, but it doesn't say anything at all about the government's speech. And so the court in the past, the Supreme Court has said, look, if you don't like the government's message, if you don't like what it's saying through the legislative branch and through its different administrative arms, then democracy. The government's accountable to the electorate, and if you don't like the message, get someone else in there to change the message.
So that's pure government speech. And that is category one of your license plates, is when the government comes up with a message, it offers this message to the public. The New Hampshire case tells us that we don't have to propagate this government speech, but the government does have the power to speak. That's situation number one, but that's not what's at issue in Texas, is it?
Well, Texas says that's what's at issue. Texas says that its specialty license plates, because it creates the program, because it controls the program and has ultimate authority for what's approved, even the specialty license plates. Texas says, because we retain that authority, it is government speech, which is confusing because Tennessee has a similar program to Texas. And Tennessee has license plates that celebrate many of the various universities in Tennessee. And that's certainly a government goal to, you know, increase university attendance in Tennessee. But ironically, they also have license plates that celebrate Penn State pride. And even more confusingly, perhaps, as I'm sure many of your Tennessee listeners know, the big rivalry for Tennessee is the University of Florida, an arch football rival. And there's a specialty license plate for the University of Florida. So is Tennessee trying to promote Florida and the University of Florida?
I think Tennessee is trying to promote its treasury is what it's trying to promote. We've spoken before, and I've mentioned that I live in the Commonwealth of Virginia, but I actually had a Florida State tag once in Virginia because my wife's an alma mater. Her alma mater is Florida State. I think it's purely about the money.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm having a perfectly wonderful conversation with my old buddy Doug McKechnie from the U.S. Air Force Academy. And we're talking about, of all things, license plates. When you see one of those vanity tags, is that you speaking or is it the government speaking? And does that have constitutional implications? After the break, we'll have our constitutional quiz, and then we'll come back and talk some more with Doug McKechnie. Stick around.
I'll scream at the
today I see something unusual on the quiz guy. He's wearing, sometimes he shows up in his green Riddler uniform, the form-fitting, very sexy Riddler uniform. Today, it's not so form... He is here in something that's not so form-fitting. In fact, it's almost like a shawl, but the shawl is in the form of a Union Jack.
Hail Britannia.
Hail Britannia. Why are you hailing Britannia, Doug?
Because we're going to be talking about some important documents today.
Some important documents. Oh, I bet I know what we're going to talk about, but I'm not going to give anything away because I'm sure we have someone on the phone line who wants to be quizzed. Do we have a contestant?
That would be me.
And who is me?
My name's Andrew Hull. I'm calling from New Jersey.
From New Jersey? What part of New Jersey, Andrew?
Mount Holly, actually. It's in Burlington County, probably about half an hour from Philadelphia, actually.
Oh, well, you're right near Philadelphia. Great city, great area. We're glad to have you with
us.
I'm just curious, how do you listen to us, Andrew?
I subscribe to the podcast. I have an iPhone, and I listen in.
Tremendous. Well, we're so very happy to have you there. And one of these days, of course, we'll get onto a Philadelphia public radio station. And you can call them up and tell them how much they need to broadcast us.
Hey, that'd be great. I think my uncle actually works for one of them, so maybe I can work something out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll do that at some point. Doug, do you have a good question for Andrew today?
I noted he said his uncle, not his godfather.
The Godfather might be a little bit more effective.
I do have a question for you today.
Yes.
This is an easy one. I know that you're going to get this. Are you ready? I'm going to read the question and give you four choices.
All right. Pressure's on.
What is often referred to as Great Charter of Liberty?
Great Charter of Liberty.
What is often referred to as Great Charter of Liberty? Is it A, Magellan, B, Magna Carta, C, Merriam-Webster, or D, Articles of Confederation?
Oh, my. Great Charter, you say?
The Great Charter of Liberty.
The Great Charter of... Can we hear those answer choices?
A, Magellan, B, Magna Carta, C, Merriam-Webster, or D, Articles of Confederation?
Andrew?
I think my gut wants to say Magna Carta.
Mm-hmm. Why is your gut telling you that?
I don't really know, but for some reason it sounds right.
Well, what about Miriam?
I feel really bad if I get this wrong. My major was government public policy, so of all people, I should be able to get this.
Well, what about Merriam-Webster? That sounded to me kind of like it had to do with words.
Yeah, I know that's the dictionary, correct?
Oh, I don't know. I can't give the answers away. I'm just asking questions here. What about Magellan? What about Magellan? That sounds kind of great.
It does, but he was a guy. A charter would be a document.
But he was a guy who would use charts, right?
Well, that's true, but not a charter of liberty. So sound like that.
No Charters of Liberty for Magellan. What was the last one, Doug?
The Articles of Confederation.
Well, that's always our standby. The Articles of Confederation. Wasn't that a great charter?
That always works for everything, right?
Well, I don't know. It obviously didn't work out too well because then they needed to go ahead and scrap it for the Constitution. So Magna Carta just seemed to make sense out of the four.
Andrew, I just could not get you off that, could I? And so, Doug, is he correct?
You know, my guess, Andrew, is that you... in fact, took Latin in school and know that Magna Carta will, in fact, be the Great Charter.
Ah, he got it correct.
Yeah, Charter of Liberty. That's right, the Magna Carta.
Well, you actually paid attention in class, Andrew. That's marvelous.
Wonderful. I did. I actually enjoyed Latin.
You took Latin. Okay, well, and he knew it.
This year, 800 years old in 2015.
When you came in with your Union Jack, and then when you said you were going to talk about documents, I thought to myself, I know where this is headed. So well done to Andrew, and a good question from Doug. And thanks very much for playing. And Andrew, that's absolutely marvelous. I think we're going to do some, aren't we going to do some shows on the Magna Carta this year?
We are. We're going to do a lot on the Magna Carta this year.
Right. In fact, doesn't Montpelier have something going on with the Magna Carta?
We always have things happening with the Magna Carta. It's a great charter of freedom.
There we go.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. We appreciate your time. And by the way, send us an email at ywc@montpelier.org and give us your snail mail address and give us your shirt size, and we will have your t-shirt to you, and we will also have your copy of the Constitution, a pocket Constitution from James Madison's Montpelier.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay, thanks, Andrew, and thank you, Doug.
You bet, Stuart. Hey, it's the Constitution. I read it for the articles.
You're listening to your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with my old buddy Doug McKechnie of the Law Department at the United States Air Force Academy. And we're talking about a really cool issue, one that perhaps you've come in contact with yourself. It involves those vanity license plate tags. Who gets to decide whether you can have particular letters or words on your tag, or if you can get a certain design on your tag? I mean, you might have ideas of what you'd like, but the state that issues the tag might have very different ideas. Is there a First Amendment issue here, or does this involve something called government speech?
Let's just define a little bit more closely what we're talking about. We're talking about a circumstance where it's not merely the state creating money-generating options for the public to choose from. There's actually a program in Texas and in a lot of other states where people can apply to have a new message put on license plates, and that's what this case is all about, isn't it?
It is. There's actually, in Texas, there's almost 200 plates out of the, I think, possibly 400 options they have for specialty license plates. They've got lots and lots of options there, but about half of them were designed and proposed by individuals, individual private citizens or nonprofits that have gone to the program in Texas is that if you want to have a specialty license plate, you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, you give them your design, and it either approves or rejects it. But it really doesn't get into the designing. It gets into the ultimate approval or disapproval. The individual private citizen is really the one who designs it, creates it, and suggests what it will look like and what the message will say.
And then Texas wants to be able to say yay or nay.
That's right. And how this particular case came about was the Sons of the Confederate Veterans in Texas, a nonprofit organization, went to the Texas Department of Motor Vehicles, just as many, many organizations had before them, and they applied to have a new specialty license plate issued by the Texas Department of Motor Vehicles. The proposed license plate had a Confederate flag on it as part of the logo of the organization, but also sort of in the background of the plate. And the Texas Department of Motor Vehicle has a policy that says it will not issue specialty license plate if the design is one that might be offensive to members of the public. And ultimately they decided, because the public weighed in and they had hearings, the Department of Motor Vehicles ultimately decided that they were not going to issue the specialty license plate.
For the Sons of Confederate Veterans.
Correct.
I understand. I understand the state's position, which is that this is just an alternative method of selecting what will be government speech. Okay, instead of coming up with it, you know, back at the Department of Motor Vehicles, we're letting the public make suggestions, and then we make the final choice. So this is just pure and simple government speech, just as if we'd come up with it ourselves. But it's troubling, isn't it, to think that the government is saying this speech is acceptable and that speech is not.
And I think that's what the Sons of Confederate Veterans and people who agree with their position with regard to free speech are arguing. They say, look, this is really viewpoint discrimination. You are saying that because you don't like our message, because you think our message will be offensive to some people out there in the public who are driving down the road, we're not going to be able to have our message, our design, placed on the license plate. Indeed, they argue, in the Sons of Confederate Veterans argue, that there has never been another license plate that has not been approved, and theirs has been the only one that has not been approved for a specialty license plate.
And I'm willing to bet, excuse me for interrupting, I'm willing to bet that there's more than one of those 400 or 800 plates in Texas that has some version of the American flag on it or some other patriotic symbol on it. And that was the other side in the Civil War. It was the United States government versus the Sons of Confederate Veterans, or versus the Confederacy. And so, in a sense, Texas is saying it's okay to support the United States government, but not to support, even in a historical sense, any celebration of the Confederacy.
That's right. And that's specifically what this organization is meant to do, is to sort of preserve the memory of the soldiers who fought for the Confederacy. And they're arguing we're not able to get our message across that maybe not in conflict with the, or maybe directly in conflict, depending on how you look at it, directly in conflict with an American flag. And one of the other arguments that they make, which is, I think, an interesting argument, is the state of Texas celebrates the Confederacy all the time. If you go to the state capitol,
it was part of the Confederacy.
By the pins with the rebel flag on it, and lots of logos in the shops there that are run by the government. So they kind of are saying it's sort of ironic that you won't let us have the Confederate flag on a license plate, but you'll sell bric-a-brac that has the Confederate flag.
Yeah, and I think this is probably an appropriate juncture for us both to note that neither one of us particularly are neo-Confederate supporters. It's not as if we're saying this is a particularly worthy cause, but that's the point. Free speech is about protecting speech that you don't like, that you disagree with. These guys have a point. The government is telling them that they cannot have the same access to the license plates that somebody who wants to display an American flag or some other symbol can have. In fact, to bring it to the constitutional argument, I'm betting that the Sons of Confederate Veterans are saying that the state of Texas, and by extension other states, have created something here called a limited or designated public forum.
That's one of the arguments. Uh-huh. And if that is what's happening, if the government has created this forum that did not exist before, the forum being the license plate, once it creates that forum, it can't discriminate based on viewpoint. That can't say we like this viewpoint and we don't like that viewpoint.
That's extremely important, and we have to do a little bit of foundation here. The government owns all sorts of property. The government, including license plates, including buildings, including physical ground, and by and large, the government doesn't have to make those spaces available for political debate. I mean, you don't go into an IRS office and hold a demonstration. But if, and I say if, the government decides that part of that, maybe a side of the building or a pegboard or a bulletin board inside the building, or maybe an auditorium within the government building, is going to be used to present one viewpoint or one sort of speech, then it possibly has created what the courts have called a public forum or a designated public forum. And as you've just said, once it does that, whether intentionally or sometimes inadvertently, it lets one person speak. Well, it's got to let somebody with the other viewpoint speak as well. And it seems to me that that's what they've done here with these license plates. They've said this space on the front of this tag that is owned by the government, where we're doing our speech, we're now letting other people jump in and speak there, and we're getting their money for it. I just don't know how they can say that they can start discriminating on the basis of viewpoint now.
Well, what the government argues is that we've created, this is the government's argument, we've created this whole forum from the beginning. We run the program. We have ultimate approval authority, even though we might not be engaged in the actual hands-on design of the different suggestions that come in. We have final approval. We get to vote whether it's approved or not. And because of that, and this sort of ability to say whether or not something will go on the license plate, which is a government piece of property, we are the ones who are speaking. The private motorist is just...
Wait a second. The government's begging the question. No, that's the question. Does the government have the power to regulate speech once it has allowed various viewpoints? I mean, I understand it's the government's position, but how is this not a public forum? I just don't really understand it. Unless you buy into this whole idea of it being really primarily government speech, or do the courts call it hybrid speech when they mix it like this?
They do. That's sometimes a concept that's thrown out there. When the government and an individual are speaking at the same time, it's the question is which one is the majority? Is it more private or is it more government? I think really what's happened here is the states have gotten themselves into a little bit of a pickle. What they saw was, wow, look at all this money that we can make from these great specialty license plates. And as I mentioned before, Tennessee has somewhere up around 300 or 400 of these specialty license plates. They probably charge you double the price of the generic license plate. And in the race to take advantage of this economic opportunity, they may have opened themselves up to to an argument that, hey, if you're going to accept certain messages or virtually any message for a specialty license plate, well, then you have better be prepared to accept all messages and all viewpoints. And that's something that the First Amendment really celebrates and encourages. Indeed, as you mentioned earlier, the First Amendment is really set up to protect particularly the messages that we dislike and detest. Because it's that robust discussion and exposure to ideas that we hope will lead us to a more informed decision-making process.
Precisely. I just don't like the idea of anyone, whether it's a DMV clerk or whether it's the head of the Department of Motor Vehicles or the governor himself, of anyone telling me or anybody that speech is unacceptable or that speech is acceptable. That's the gut reaction I have, the constitutional reaction I have. And so now I'm going to argue the opposite. Has the government argued that there is an adequate alternative means of expressing something simply by either covering up or simply deciding not to buy a particular plate, or maybe even by putting a bumper sticker on your car that carries a contrary message?
In fact, that's one of the government's most, I think, interesting and perhaps persuasive arguments. The government says, you want a Confederate battle flag on your car? Get a bumper sticker. Indeed, you could get a huge bumper sticker. You could paint your car to look like a Confederate battle flag.
Make it the General Lee.
Yeah,
from the Dukes of Hazzard. Yeah,
the government says the very reason that you want to put your message on a license plate is because it comes, or it appears as though it comes, with the seal of approval from the state. That's the only reason, the government argues, that the Sons of Confederate Veterans is fighting about this, because they want that sort of seal of approval that this is coming with the power of the state on the license plate. Because the government says you could do this in any way, and indeed, and you could get the message out in a bigger, more bold way by getting a bumper sticker. So the government tries to use that against the Sons of Confederate Veterans in this particular argument. The government also says what this really is, this a more analogous situation, is imagine that the government decides to accept donations for monuments to put in a park. And it says, hey, we're going to accept statues and monuments, and we're going to put them in this designated area in a public park. Well, there have been cases in the past where the Supreme Court has said the government, when it accepts or rejects a monument, can make the decision about which monuments it wants to put forward. It's a monument is government speech, and so when someone walks through a park and sees a statue or sees some sort of display, whether it's art or otherwise, that display, that statue is owned and maintained by the government, and so the government's got some editorial power to determine what messages it's going to place in its public parks. And so the government tries to argue that this is a similar situation. This is similar to a public park. It's a piece of property that's owned by the government, and the government will decide which messages will go on this license plate and which messages won't.
You are listening to your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with my friend Doug McKechnie all about those vanity license tags out there. Is that government speech, in which case the government gets to say what it wants? Or is that individual speech, which is protected by the First Amendment? After the break, we'll have our Madison Minute, and then we'll come back and finish this discussion with Doug McKechnie. Stick around.
The need to protect American access to the Mississippi revealed to James Madison a vital connection between the effective conduct of foreign affairs and a stronger Union. American weakness invited foreign high-handedness. In 1784, Madison explained to Jefferson why he thought the renewed Spanish attempt to close the river to navigation was, quote, impolitic and perverse. She can, Madison asserted, no more finally stop the current of trade down the river than she can that of the river itself. Though justice and the general rights of mankind were often disregarded in international relations, he noted, it was no small advantage that these considerations were on the American side in the navigation dispute. Even the most corrupt councils, he believed, would be somewhat touched by the progress of philosophy and civilization. Should such considerations fail, Spanish national interest required her to permit free navigation. With a Madison Minute, I'm Jim Blaylock.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm having what I personally think of as sort of an office discussion with my friend Doug McKechnie. You see, Doug and I used to both work at the Appalachian School of Law, and we would have these rolling, random conversations about legal concepts all the time. And as if you've been listening, you've been hearing us go back and forth over the issue of license plates, Nazis, Confederates. Are those license plates that you see, those vanity tags, are those individual speech, which comes under the First Amendment, or are they government speech? And Doug and I are both big First Amendment guys, so I've been sort of reluctant to acknowledge that maybe these are just the government talking, and therefore the First Amendment doesn't apply.
I guess there really is something that is government speech, and in fact, it exists in the school systems. When the schools decide in a particular curriculum and they pick this book and not that book, they're making a choice on speech. When the government pays for the art galleries at the Smithsonian on the mall, the National Mall in Washington, D.C., they choose this painting or that sculpture and not this other painting. And so I guess there are all sorts of examples to which we can analogize these license plates.
I think that's right. And I think that while we might instinctively think, well, of course, that's the person's message that's driving that car, I think a lot of people would think that if you're driving down the street and you see someone in front of you who has a University of Pittsburgh license plate or a Pittsburgh Steelers license plate, I say those because I'm from Pittsburgh and I'd love to have one of those license plates. But if you see someone driving down the street and they have a license plate like that, you think, well, that guy's a Steelers fan. You don't think, well, the state of fill in the blank is a Steelers fan. One other thing that the Confederate Veterans argues is, if it's really truly government speech, why many of the specialty license plate programs require that a certain number of people register before the plate is issued? Well, if it's really government speech, why would you have to wait until there's some critical mass of people before the plate is issued? Why not just issue the plate? And so that seems to be the government relying on people to adopt and really want to articulate a message that they agree with and that they're willing to articulate and attach to their car, and seems to imply that it might be private speech.
Yeah, I guess so. And I guess a son of Confederate veterans or any particular a person of any particular viewpoint might be irritated to drive down the road and see a viewpoint with which that person disagrees displayed on a license plate. And that might be the impetus for such a person to go and try to get his own competing license plate. But I guess the government responds, well, that's not the remedy. If you don't like government speech as it appears on a license plate, then you simply need to vote out the government officials who approve that license plate.
I think that would be the government's response, is that democracy works. If we're producing license plates as government speech and you don't like what we're saying, get someone in there of a different political party, of a different ideology, and they will produce the license plates that you want. I think on the flip side, one can argue part of a robust exchange of ideas is sometimes being offended, right? Sometimes people will articulate messages that we will not like, but that's part of living in a free society, and part of liberty is being exposed to ideas that we may disagree with. They may either be persuasive, we may be persuaded to adopt the idea, or we may realize why our ideas are even better by comparing them with contrary ideas.
I guess it's true, and I guess if we did adopt the Sons of Confederates veterans position, then that would mean Katie barred the door. That would mean the next thing we'd have to approve in Texas and elsewhere would be the Nazi Party license plates, or perhaps some other extremely offensive group that's out there. The Ku Klux Klan could have its license plates with burning crosses on the back of these things. And I guess people would be pretty offended by that.
I think that that's what the government, it's a parade of horribles that the government argues, that what's next? And I think the examples that you've given are perfectly good examples of what may come next. If we really are going to open this forum up to all viewpoints, all ideas, but I think that when the government opens up a forum like that, opens up a forum in a way that is going to be accessible to everyone, then I think that the government has provided a forum such that robust debate can happen, and there will be people that will be offended. But I'm not sure, there have been people that have said some pretty dastardly, terrible things over the course of the history of the United States, who expressed themselves in terrible ways and expressed terrible ideas. We have neo-Nazis, and we have people who espouse racism and sexism and all sorts of things like that, but we're still standing. We're still a strong, robust democracy, and I think that we can take a little bit of offense now and then.
So I'm guessing that's where you come out, because you're the old ACLU guy. I'm betting you're coming out in favor of or on the side of the Sons of Confederate Veterans in this one, aren't you?
Well, I guess I'm predisposed to the civil libertarian perspective on the First Amendment. I also think that this court, the specific Texas case that we've been talking about, this court is going to be deciding whether or not these specially licensed plates are private speech or government speech. And this court has been repeatedly finding in favor of the individual, in favor of speech protection. And so I have a strong feeling that the ultimate conclusion will be that if the government's going to set up these programs where it solicits or accepts private individual messages and designs for specially licensed plates, then it's going to have to open the program up to everyone and not discriminate based on viewpoint.
I think you may be right, and I think that may be the way the court comes down. But then that's going to be a really significant position, because one of two things is going to happen. Either we're going to start seeing the Nazi license plates, or the states are simply going to discontinue these programs, and that's going to have a significant budgetary impact on a number of states.
You know, it's funny. I always say when I'm talking about the First Amendment and I'm talking about government action, I always say to myself and to others, when it comes to limiting free speech rights, or, for example, opening up a forum, sometimes the government's just got to not do it, right? So I know it's going to be hard if they decide that they don't want racist and designs on their license plates. Well, then you're just going to have to forego the money that you would otherwise get from these license plates programs, because once you open them up, it's very difficult to start to say, well, you know, this one's offensive and that one's not offensive, and allow some viewpoints and not others. Indeed, the Sons of Confederate Veterans, in their arguments, they pointed out that at the same time that their specially licensed license plate was disapproved by the Department of Motor Vehicles, there was a specially licensed plate that celebrated Buffalo Soldiers, and it was approved in spite of the fact that a lot of Native Americans had argued that they were offended by that particular license plate. And so, you know, that really does get into this idea that, you know, do we really want government picking and choosing the ideas that are going to be articulated, even if the forum is a sort of strange forum that's a little unclear about whether it's government or private speech? I think most of us look at a license plate and think, yeah, that special license plate, that message on that license plate is certainly coming from that particular driver.
Well, my heart is on your side in this one, because I tend to be very speech protective as well. But I, you know, the more we talk about it, the more I think the government does have some pretty significant arguments on its side. And let's think through some of the ramifications. If the Sons of Confederate Veterans win this case, if this really is a designated public forum and there can be no viewpoint discrimination, then how does that affect other government speech? Does that mean, therefore, that if the government decides it's going to have solicit contributions for those monuments, that it can't discriminate? I mean, it really can't do that anymore. It can't ask the public to suggest monuments, because then the act of picking and choosing is going to be similar to the act of picking and choosing messages on license plates.
Well, I think what it comes down to is, what would the reasonable observer believe with regard to the author of the message? So the Sons and Confederate Veterans argue that everyone associates a specialty license plate with the person who's driving the car. And I think that's a pretty good argument. We drive down the street, we see a specialty license plate. I think that person who's driving that car is a fan of that football team or into horses or whatever it is that license plate says. On the flip side, someone who's walking through, you know, the National Mall or a public park and sees some sort of monument says, that's a stationary fixed monument, and that's a government message. That I think the reasonable observer says to him or herself, that's government expression. The government owns the park. It's a stationary presentation of information. Now, how one interprets that piece of artwork or that statue or that monument is obviously up to the observer. But most people walk through the park and say, that monument, that piece of artwork, that statue, that was picked by the government, government authority, government message. And so I do think that there's a little bit of a distinction with regard to the longevity of the monument in the park, and really who's doing the speaking in that circumstance.
So license plates are special.
Well, I think that because the person, because the government requires, the government relies on the individual private person to both suggest the specialty license plate for those programs that allow it, to suggest the specialty license plate, and then take the next step of putting that license plate and attaching it to his or her car, doesn't that create a message that's coming from that particular person? Now, the government says, no, it's just a private person who happens to be disseminating our message. I'm just not sure that's the case. Indeed, you know, think of all the specialty license plates that we see on the road. Some are, there are various groups, ideologies, activities, colleges, fraternities, sororities. I mean, is the government really in favor of the University of Tennessee and the University of Florida and Penn State? I mean, why would Tennessee, the state of Tennessee, want to celebrate the University of Pennsylvania or Penn State or the University of Florida? That just doesn't seem like a logical message that would come from the government of Tennessee. And I'm just picking Tennessee as an example.
Sure. No, the more I think about it, Doug, I really do think that license plates are special, because it's, if not the only time, but it's one of the very few times when the government actually requires you, at least if you want to drive, if you want to own a car, it requires you to have this placard that you affix to your vehicle. It's almost like they require you to wear a certain color shirt or something that has a message on it. And that's, the license tags are about the only time I can think of off the top of my head where the government does that. And so I think it's that very special quality that creates this issue with whether it's government speech or individual speech.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to the driver's choice. You know, the driver has the choice of picking the generic plate or picking from, in some states, hundreds of different messages. Indeed, in Texas, if you go onto the Texas website and read about how the program works, Texas is very upfront, and it says, you know, how does the specialty license plate program work? Oh, this is your message. This is, you know, you choose which specialty license plate and what the design will look like. And so it's really, I think, even the way the government holds out the program to its citizens to increase revenue is that this is all about you. This is your message. This is your individual ideas that you're going to express on the license plate. But then when one wants to express an idea that the government doesn't like and the government may find offensive, then the government isn't making it so much about you. Then the government changes the argument and says that, well, really, this is our message. We have ultimate approval authority. Well, yeah, but If you're only disapproving or only rejecting one out of 400 or 500 applications, and you're really not creating the design from the beginning to the end, you're just having an approval or rejection vote once it's proposed, I'm just not sure that the message that the special license plates contain are messages that come from the government.
Yeah, now you're convincing me the other way again. I keep going back and forth on this one. It's a tough thing. But going back to the idea of the license plates, you know, if we go your way, if we go the way of the Sons of Confederate Veterans here and we declare that this is a designated forum and basically everybody can get his design and license plates, I'm just concerned, you know, about whether that's going to have implications elsewhere. And I'm starting to think maybe it won't. And one circumstance that came up beyond just the monuments on the National Mall has to do with the naming of public schools. Now, that's a government facility. It's a government action when they name the school. It's a government action. It's government speech when they name the school. And it's government speech if they change the name of the school. And coincidentally, there was a controversy involving a Confederate, Nathan Bedford Forrest. There was a school in Jacksonville, near where I lived in Florida, that was named Nathan Bedford Forrest High School. And a number of people found this very, very offensive, not merely because Nathan Bedford Forrest was a Confederate, but it's because he was a war criminal. I mean, he committed all sorts of atrocities, especially against Union prisoners who were African Americans. So a very racist fellow, one of the early founders of the first iteration of the Ku Klux Klan, just not a very savory character. And so there was a great outcry, especially as the demographics in Jacksonville changed and a majority of the students at the school were African American. And my recollection is that they changed the name of the school. And so that's exactly what you were talking about with government speech at the beginning. The government spoke one way at one time. Politics changed. People's perception changed. The people came together and say, we don't like this government speech. Let's vote in new leaders and let's change the government speech. Nobody would have said that this was anything but the government speaking. It was not an individual situation like the license plates. So I'm thinking that even if the court does go your way on the license plate question, we would still be able to differentiate it from other government speech. Okay, as usual, Doug, when we talk about the First Amendment, you've set my head spinning around again. It's a much more complicated circumstance than I realized at the beginning, but I'm going to look into my crystal ball, and I'm going to agree with you. I'm thinking that the court is probably going to come down on the side of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. And so, assuming that happens, here's my last question. Which license plate are you going to rush out and propose there in Colorado?
Maybe I'll go for that Steelers license plate.
I think we're going to get a weekly constitutional license plate here in Virginia. Absolutely.
Well, I might run up against some Denver fans, I'll tell you that. I already have.
So. That could happen. Well, Doug McKechnie of the United States Air Force Academy Law Department, you want to give us your closing disclaimer now just to make sure you don't get in trouble with the Air Force?
Absolutely. Thank you, Stuart. My views are my own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or the United States government.
Tremendous. Well, Doug, thanks once again for enlightening us, I think, on this First Amendment issue. And we'll certainly have to talk to you some other time after the court makes this decision.
Thanks for inviting me, Stuart.
And that's our show. Thanks very much to my good buddy Doug McKechnie of the Law Department of the United States Air Force Academy for explaining all about license plates and government speech. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our distribution engineers are Chad Barrett and Bob Hoffman. Our music is by the Fifes and Drums of Colonial Williamsburg. How about that? And our Madison Minute is done by the incomparable Jim Blaylock, who refuses to pay for a vanity tag because he says he got tired of making them in his previous job. I'm Stuart Harris. Remember, you are a part of the American experiment.